Make Me Smart is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Get ready. Crack your knuckles. It's time.
Crack your knuckles.
I can't crack my knuckles. I cannot crack them at all.
You mean like you can't do it or you won't do it?
I mean, maybe if someone else did it, but if I tried, I wouldn't be able to. I am Megan McCarty Carino, the non-knuckle cracking Megan McCarty Carino. Welcome back to Make Me Smart, where we make today make sense, all from the comfort of my very special pantry, which is full of pancake mix and tomato sauce.
I'm Andy Euler. It's so good to be here with you, Megan, again. Thank you so much, everybody else, for joining us on this Hollowed Out Shell Thursday. We're going to do what usually happens on a Thursday. We'll start with a news fix. We'll do a little Make Me Smile. But before we get to that, how is your shell feeling today? Megan, everything going good?
You know, honestly, my shell is in pretty good shape.
Okay.
It's not as hollow as it usually is. How's your shell?
My shell's okay. I was just telling you, and this will get to where we, yeah, I think, need to go. We had a cold front move in. I'm in Austin, Texas, and we had a cold front move in last night. So the dogs are a little more upset about things, and they're kind of looking, you know, like when they go to the door and then they look at you and they're like, I don't think I want to go outside, dude.
Yeah.
You're like, nah, you should probably go outside.
Yeah, gonna have to.
So we are, yeah, we're sort of in the middle of this. For those of us in Texas too, these cold temperatures are bringing back some bad memories of last year.
Right.
In February, we had that big freeze, right?
Yeah.
I actually ended up living with my cousin Pat for 4 days, I think. Mm-hmm. Because we didn't have any power at my house. And so my partner and I and the dogs all went over to Pat's house because he had power, and he's actually only a few blocks from my house, but they ended up being on a different grid, or, you know, a different sort of part of the grid.
Yeah,
it was. And so honestly, you know, more than 200 people died. It was terrible, because we had so many rolling blackouts because, the power here in Texas couldn't stay on.
And the heat is electric, and for most folks, right?
So what happens is, a lot of times, especially like at my house, for instance, we have natural gas and we have gas hookups, but everybody's thermostat is hooked up to the electricity, right? And so my thermostat didn't know to turn itself on and then to activate the gas to be turned on. And so it is sort of one of those things. I've been thinking about this. There was a wonderful article in Texas Monthly, which is a great magazine. Yeah. Check it out if you can. Russell Gold put together this really, really nice article sort of chronicling exactly what happened during the freeze, and then also sort of pointed to what needed to happen during the legislative session and whether it did. And unfortunately, it sounds like not everything that needed to happen, in fact, happened. There was a lot of talk about how that's not going to happen again. We're not going to have rollouts. The governor, Governor Abbott, came out and said, look, we fixed the grid. Everything is fine. The problem is that's probably not the case, or we hope that it's the case. But we didn't really put in the sort of safeguards that we needed to make sure that it is. There were a few bills passed. There were some sort of, It was kind of like penalties if you didn't weatherize, because that was the big issue in February, right? Is that a lot of our power plants had to shut down because they froze.
Right.
A lot of the natural gas that produces the electricity here in Texas froze. And so that was one of the things that we talked about a bunch this legislative session. Right after the freeze happened, there was a lot of talk about, we need to weatherize. What's really frustrating for folks in Texas was that 10 years ago, we literally had the same thing happen, and we talked about doing the exact same thing. FERC actually told us to do that, said, hey, you need to weatherize your power grid, or this is going to happen again, and then it did. So Russell has this wonderful sort of chronology of what happened. At the end of the article, it sort of says they talked about a lot and they did some things in the legislature, but you probably aren't in as good of shape as you think. You know, of course, I'm sitting here texting my buddies and texting my cousins and texting everybody. Hey, do you have a generator? Did you, you know, did you go out and get one as a result of last February? Because honestly, that's what people are thinking about right now. I mean, The thing about it, too, Megan, is one of those I think about this all the time because of the reporting that I'm doing. And this is not just Texas. I mean, we have so much grid infrastructure that's so old.
Yeah, right.
This is a national issue. I mean, you guys have blackouts. You have in California.
Yeah.
We were talking about this over the summer, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I know. Tony Wagner, you know, our digital producer, he seems like he always gets the worst of it. He's always has a blackout when we have these crazy heat waves. I don't know what grid he's on, but luckily mine doesn't seem to be as bad. But I mean, yeah, always during the moment when you least need it, when you're having these crazy heat waves, people are dying, there's fires, you know, starting up everywhere, and then the power goes out all over the state, or, you know, when they're we have the high winds and things like that, and the power the power went out through, I think, like millions of households in Southern California on Thanksgiving because there were Santa Ana winds going on. So they had the power company had to shut down the power because, yeah, the infrastructure is in bad shape.
It's in bad shape, and it's one of those things that you really do. It's kind of like water, right? You take it for granted. When it's not there, then that's when you start freaking out about it. That's when you start thinking about it. With electricity, it's the exact same thing. When all of our houses didn't have any electricity, then it was like, okay, we need to get something done. And the legislature certainly talked about it because a lot of people here in Texas were talking about it, but I don't think they actually did what needed to be done. I hope. I'm crossing my fingers. I hope that it's not as cold as it was in February, but that's not a solution. You can't just cross your fingers. Right?
Yeah. Yikes. Well,
what are you thinking about?
So I was on Twitter a lot today, and
fair enough.
There was a
that seems like a dangerous proposition, but I'll leave you to it.
I know. Both of my items are from the Twitter discourse today. So hang on. But no, so there was this professor at the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania. You know, we talk to them all the time. One of the best business schools in the country.
Yeah, they're great.
She tweeted about something that she asked her students, and it went totally viral. Nina Strominger, she is a professor of legal studies and business ethics at the Wharton School. And she said, I asked Wharton students what they thought the average American worker makes per year.
Sure.
And 25% of them thought it was over six figures. One of them thought it was $800,000. That cannot be real. Nobody.
The average American worker.
The average American worker. She said, really not sure what to make of this. The real number is 45,000. I mean, 800,000.
The internet, I imagine, had some opinion on this, right?
It did. The internet had so many opinions about it.
Sure.
One of the oft-cited memes was the mom from Arrested Development when she's
Lucille.
Lucille, when she's talking about the price of bananas, and she's like, what could they cost? $10 a banana? just being so totally out of touch. But really, I think, you know, what Professor Strominger, she wasn't trying to sort of dunk on her students. She asked them this question because there is a lot of evidence that pretty much everyone carries a lot of cognitive bias when it comes to sort of what they think about the earnings of other people. So she tweeted, you know, links to some other studies that showed just how little individuals, you know, just how bad people are at sort of understanding how much other people make, both at the high and the low end. So she tweeted a link to a study, you know, actually an international study, but people in the United States did the worst at it, where they underestimated how big the gap was between kind of how big the income inequality was. And then when they were asked to sort of say what they think the ideal would be, you know, what the ideal ratio would be, and compare that to what they thought it was, just absolute gross underestimation of what the actual income inequality was. Multiple studies on that. And one of the most insidious and one of the sort of biggest places where people really, really underestimate this kind of inequality is when it comes to the racial wealth gap. There's been a lot of study of how people perceive how much progress has been made in the racial wealth gap. And honestly, since the 60s, almost no progress has been made on the racial wealth gap. But, you know, respondents will say they think that it's 80% less than what it actually is.
But in the aggregate, it's just not happening, right?
Right. Yeah. I think in 2020, there was a story in The Washington Post that in 2020, the racial wealth gap was what it was in 1968, which is incredible. You know, the wealth owned by whites on average compared to the wealth owned by black families on average, that disparity was the same since 1968. I think it had gone up and down a bit in between, but that it's now basically like the 1960s again. And, you know, like these kinds of, this is important to us as a society to have an accurate sort of understanding of, you know, the differences between, this has come up a lot, obviously, you know, over the last year, as we've talked about, like, minimum wage and the wages that low-income workers are making and whether they're too much and they're hurting the economy, you know, compared to, say, what CEOs are making, that people really have no concept. That I think in 2020, the ratio of, like, CEO to minimum wage was 351. to one. You know, these sort of inform how we think about policy and how we think about, you know, the types of benefits and policies that are needed to sort of have a more fair society, and people really have no idea what they're looking at.
And it doesn't feel like, you tell me, I wanted to ask you the question about, it's not folks aren't empathetic. It's not people not sort of understanding or feeling for somebody else's situation. It really is just a lack of understanding about what people are either up against or sort of what they're making, and not, I guess, being in an echo chamber. I mean, this is part of a bigger discussion, right?
Totally. I think that's really the takeaway is that, you know, I mean, there have been studies that when people are presented with the minimum wage, say, as an hourly rate versus a yearly rate, they have totally different, you know, ideas about what it should be. Don't understand, like, you know, $7.25 an hour is $15,000 a year. Things like that. You know, they're just that it's not that there's a deficit. I mean, maybe in some cases, but it's not that there's an intentional deficit of compassion or empathy or understanding, but it's just really hard for, you know, people cognitively to conceive, seemingly, of how different the situation can be for people at different levels of the income spectrum, and especially if you've sort of grown up in one strata of that income spectrum, to really conceive of how different it is. Yeah.
It's incredible. All right. That's kind of, I mean, I think the sort of lesson here, right, is try to put yourself in a situation where you can understand. I mean, that's what's so wonderful about our jobs, right, is that we get to call people and we get to ask people about what they're up against, what their situation is. And so asking those questions and putting yourself in those situations where you really do have a better understanding about other people, I mean, it's a good thing. Yeah.
That is the best part of our job. And I think that leads us into
the
next part of the show.
Yep. All right, you go ahead.
Okay. So my make me smile for today is not so much of a heartwarming story, but one that just made me crack up a lot. So I told you I've been on Twitter all day. And there's been this, there's been a lot of discussion. I don't know if you've really given much thought in your life, Andy, to the personalities of the different colors of M&Ms, but people are thinking about it a lot today.
Fair enough. In the Twitterverse, so, is that's where you go for it,
the Twitterverse is afire with Mars Candy's new conception of the M&M personality. So, you know, like the M&Ms that are in the commercials and what have you. They have distinctive personalities, which I personally have never paid that close of attention to. And they're redesigning them.
Okay.
They're redesigning them to, you know, sort of update them for the current world and the current vibes and things. Of course, you know, so there's been some backlash against some of the new concepts, but probably the one that's getting the most attention is the infamous green M&M. I don't want to get
the green
like,
M&M
too far into that, but basically they're really changing up the green M&M's kind of image. So according to CBS News, the most notable changes include the green M&M's redesign, which will exchange the white-heeled go-go boots she was given in 1997 for, quote, cool, laid-back sneakers to reflect her effortless confidence. The green M&M will also be better represented to reflect confidence and empowerment as a strong female and known for much more than her boots. I mean, I guess like any day when you can desexualize candy, it's a good day for our culture.
Well, that's what I was going to say is that, I mean, it's a good step, I guess. I mean, it you know, you're right. The sort of the different places you can go when you're talking about the green M&M. Sure.
Right.
But it is. It does speak to sort of the idea of, you know what, we need to update these things. I think that's, I think you're
right.
I have to say
my favorite update was to the orange M&M, who I was unaware, the orange M&M has traditionally had an anxious personality, so I relate, but the orange M&M will, quote, embrace his true self, worries and all, but the orange M&M's shoelaces will now be tied to represent his cautious nature. There's a lot of attention to the footwear of the M&Ms in these. Somebody really gave a lot of thought to the footwear of the M&Ms.
Right. How these M&Ms are getting around is a really important aspect of this. Apparently.
Yeah. Yeah. But I'm glad that, you know, there's a, you know, positive representation of anxiety among the M&Ms. And and I'll just leave it there.
Hey, do you Wordle?
Okay, I have resisted the Wordle thing. Like, I refuse to let it penetrate my consciousness. I don't know anything about it.
You're spending time on Twitter talking to people about M&Ms.
I like muted Wordle references.
You don't want to waste your time on Wordle.
Yeah, no, would not.
Okay, so a buddy of mine, it was so funny because it was the most innocuous text, right? It was like, hey, it's me and another buddy of mine. We're in a three guy text group, and I was like, "Hey, do you guys like word games?" So that's how it started, right? So we share our. I don't share it on social media. I don't really sort of do that, but we share our Wordle. Yeah, it's just between me and these other couple of guys, and. So my buddy Dave sent me this because we also talk a lot about sports. We talk a lot about gambling. That's basically what this text group is. Our major subjects are things like that. Mm-hmm. And so he sent me this link that apparently there is now a new version of Wordle that was adapted and developed called Absurdle. So Absurdle apparently changes its mind. So what happens in Wordle? I'll break this down for you, right? For those of you who haven't played. When you get letters right and you get them in the right spot, the letter's going to be green. When you get a letter right, but it's not in the right spot, it's going to be yellow. So and there are five letters in each of these words, and you sort of work it out, right? So you see that, oh, the O in the second slot is green. So I need an O, you know, I need a word with O as the second letter. Things like that. So what happens with Absurdle, and it makes so much sense that my buddy sent me this. Apparently, the words can change their mind after your guesses in this new version of the game. So depending on what you guess, if you get a letter right, then that letter is going to stay. But all those other letters are sort of up for changing. So there are moving parts in the different five letters that can happen. So it's, for me, it's like this delightfully vindictive word game, right? Mm. It's like, oh, you thought you had it, man. But this game, you know, this word is actually going to change after your guess. Mm. For me, I mean, I don't know. I think
who
it's great.
Love a
I think it's
sassy
hilarious.
Word game. Yeah.
I know. Sassy word games. I mean, I'm all about it. I think, you know, that sort of innocuous text about, hey, do you like word games? It's like, man, if somebody sent me a text that said, hey, do you like word games, but the word's going to change a bunch? I don't know. I don't know if I would buy in. But now, of course, that I saw the link, I'm like, of course. All right, I'm in.
You're all in.
All right. On that note, that is it for us today. I'll be back tomorrow with Kimberly Adams for an Economics on Tap. And in case you missed it, we're taking a little break from the YouTube live stream for a month or so, but we're going to still be doing this podcast, drinks, and playing half empty, half full.
And there's also a newsletter if you find you need even more Make Me Smart in your life. It comes out Friday super early. Sign up at marketplace.org/newsletters. And please keep sending us your questions and your comments.
Absolutely.
You can send them to makemesmart@marketplace.org or leave us a voice message at 508-UB-SMART.
I just keep thinking of five different letters and like different things that are going to change in the letter.
Do you dream about them?
No, I really don't. You know, what's funny is that I spent the entire day sort of thinking about the Wordle because I was on a deadline today, so I couldn't do it immediately.
Nice distraction. Make Me Smart is produced by Marissa Cabrera with help from Marque Green. Today's episode was engineered by Charlton Thorpe.
Bridget Bodner is the senior producer. The director of On Demand is DT, Donna Tam. All right. Mm-hmm. You're off the hook for tomorrow.
Yeah. I was going to make a shrub if I had the opportunity to share a drink. I've been saving my shrub for just such an opportunity.
For next time?
Yep.
Sure.
Strong communication skills are critical for success in business and in life. Hi, I'm Matt Abrahams, and I host Stanford Graduate School of Business's Think Fast, Talk Smart, the podcast. Each week, I sit down with experts to discuss the best tips to help you with your communication skills, from conflict management to mastering small talk to tackling communication anxiety. Join us and start to develop and hone your communication skills. Listen every Tuesday wherever you get your podcasts or on YouTube.